From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Violence deepened and expanded in Syria with one account of 250 deaths in the government's bombardment of the rebel enclave in eastern Ghouta near Damascus since Sunday, as well as the intervention of pro-regime forces on the side of Kurds against Turkish forces in the northwest. The Syrian Observatory for Human Rights said the death in the toll is the highest in a 48-hour period of the seven-year conflict since a 2013 chemical attack. Video uploaded on social media showed the aftermath of bombings in Arbin, with rescuers trying to reach people trapped in the debris. In Washington, U.S. spokesperson Heather Nauert expressed deep concern over the escalating fighting, including attacks on hospitals and civilian infrastructure.
The Assad regime's siege and starve tactics are creating a humanitarian disaster. The horrors of East Aleppo are being repeated in East Ghouta, with the ongoing slaughter of trapped civilians and woefully inadequate access for humanitarian actors.
She said the U.S. supports a month-long cessation of hostilities to allow delivery of humanitarian aid, the evacuation of civilians in need of medical attention. Meanwhile, in northwest Afrin, this pro-regime fighter said he was with the Syrian Popular Forces and part of an effort to help the Syrian people confront what he called the Ottoman occupiers. Turkey intervened in January against YPG Kurdish fighters. South Africa's new president, Cyril Ramaphosa, Tuesday told Parliament he planned to screen the lifestyles of future government officials in a bid to combat corruption.
That is something that I believe we have to do. And this will be done starting with the executive of the country. Yes, we will go in that way.
Mr. Ramaphosa taking over from Jacob Zuma. This is VOA News. Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas, addressing the UN Security Council Tuesday, called for a new, broader Mideast peace process to replace U.S.-led mediation. Mr. Abbas called for the convening of an international conference later this year, including Security Council members and the so-called International Quartet, the U.S., EU, Russia, and UN. The Palestinian leader rejected further U.S. mediation after President Donald Trump recognized Jerusalem as Israel's capital in December. U.S. UN Ambassador Nikki Haley said the Palestinian leadership is at a crossroads.
You can choose to denounce the United States, reject the U.S. role in peace talks, and pursue punitive measures against Israel in international forums like the UN. I assure you that path will get the Palestinian people exactly nowhere toward the achievement of their aspirations.
The other choice, she said, is moving to a negotiated compromise that holds great potential for improving the lives of Palestinians. The Trump administration, meanwhile, is preparing a new peace initiative. Last week, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson said the plan was fairly well advanced. U.S. Vice President Mike Pence was scheduled to meet North Korean officials on the sidelines of the Winter Olympics in South Korea, possibly including the sister of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, but Pyongyang canceled at the last minute. Pence's condemnation of the North's rights record scuppered the meeting. Go Myung-hyun is a research fellow at the Seoul-based Asan Institute for Policy Studies.
There were indications that North Koreans were reaching out to the United States and through different channels. And also we know that the South Korean government was, pretty much open about its desire for the United States and North Korea to sit together and talk.
A Pence spokesman said had the meeting gone off, the vice president would have delivered an uncompromising message about the North's denuclearization. South Korea Wednesday signed a free trade pact with five Central American countries, Costa Rica, El Salvador, Honduras, Nicaragua, and Panama, aimed at boosting its auto and electronics exports. It will take effect once each country ratifies it. It is aimed at eliminating duties on about 95% of traded goods. The fate of Angela Merkel's chancellorship rests with members of Germany's Social Democrats, who have begun voting whether to enter a new coalition with Ms. Merkel's conservatives. Rejection would mean either a new election or a minority government. The Parliament of the Maldives Tuesday approved a 30-day extension of a state of emergency at the request of President Abdullah Yameen, who cited national security threats and constitutional crisis. Since February 5, he annulled a Supreme Court ruling ordering the release of opposition leaders. U.S. stocks fell Tuesday after six winning sessions amid a sharp decline in profits at giant retailer Walmart. It reported a significant drop in online sales during the Christmas holiday period. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Boateng in Washington. Today is Wednesday, February 21st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Zimbabwe opposition leader Morgan Tsvangirai was laid to rest yesterday, but his funeral was marred by fighting among supporters of his MDC party.
It is a sad reality, though, that as we go to put to rest our president, instead of us, you know, sending him off in a different way, we have got criminal thugs who are sent by some of our leaders to beat up other leaders.
Tokozani Kupe is one of the three deputy presidents of the opposition MDC. We will get the views of MDC acting president Nelson Chamisa. Today's Robert Mugabe's 94th birthday, and it has been declared a national holiday. And a new report says illegal financial flows overtake development in Africa.
What we found is that, in fact, 80% of illicit financial flows from West Africa are generated from the illegal theft of oil.
Catherine Anderson is head of governance issues at the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. Rwandan officials visit Burundi for the first time since 2015, and Ebola's impact reaches beyond its death toll to basic health care in Liberia. Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Zimbabwe's main opposition leader, Morgan Tsvangirai, who passed away last week in South Africa, was laid to rest yesterday, Tuesday, in Buhere Minikelan province. But his funeral was marred by violence caused by infighting among supporters of the Movement for Democratic Change, MDC party. Party youth claiming to be supporting MDC acting president Nelson Chamisa allegedly attacked and assaulted Tokozani Kupe, one of the three deputy presidents of the MDC. Kupe paid tribute to the late Tsvangirai, but said she was disappointed by the violent incident.
First of all, I would like to thank our president for his bravery, for his hard working, because he's one man who was a hard worker, who made sure that he travels the length and breadth of the country so that he knows the type of life every Zimbabwean is living, in order for him to be able to come up with solutions on how to ensure that every Zimbabwean has a better life. And I'd also like to say that since he was diagnosed with colon cancer, he also managed to fight it in the same manner he used to fight ZANU-PF way. But unfortunately, when God says yes, no one can say no. But it is a sad reality, though, that as we go to put to rest our president, instead of us, you know, sending him off in a different way, we have got criminal thugs who are sent by some of our leaders to beat up other leaders. I have never seen such, because for me, people must learn to respect the dead. We were supposed to be respecting our president and giving him a decent send-off. But as we arrived at the home stage, we wanted to go and greet Gogo before we go to the tent where the service was going to take place. A group of youth came and pounced on us. They started calling us names, you dissidents, go back to Matabeleland, we are going to kill you, Kupe, we are going to kill you, you must leave this party, and so on and so forth. So they started beating us up with umbrellas, with stones, with punches, and they threw beer on us. This is unacceptable, and it's uncalled for.
How many were you, and what's this, the extent of your injuries, if you're injured?
It was myself, Honorable Nzonzora, Honorable Bebe, and Chief Louis, the chairperson of the South African province. One stone hit me at my back, and they were beating us with umbrellas. My back is very, very painful as I speak right now. But I had to make sure that I go back and attend the funeral until we made sure that he has been, you know, laid to rest. But at the same time, one man then asked us to come into his hut because they were so violent. So when we went into that hut, they started throwing stones into that hut, and they wanted to burn the hut. They said, if you don't come out, we are going to burn the hut. They took a stick to touch the house. Fortunately, it was raining. The grass was wet, but it couldn't light. But the smoke was coming into the house because they tried by whatever means to make sure that they touch the hut and so that we get burnt. This is how vicious and how cruel these young men were.
Tokozani Kupe is one of the three deputy presidents of the opposition Movement for Democratic Change in Zimbabwe. She spoke with reporter Untungamile Nkomo of VOA Zimbabwe Service. Movement for Democratic Change acting President Nelson Chamisa says the party will not accept any abuse of the party leadership by people claiming to be supporting one leader over the others. Chamisa was reacting to news that party youth claiming to be supporting him attacked other party leaders yesterday during the funeral of MDC founding President Morgan Tsvangirai.
That is totally unacceptable. In fact, I got a report, which report I said to our security guys and our intelligence department, I want to get a report by tomorrow in the afternoon of what exactly transpired and what happened. We will not accept any abuse of leadership. We will not accept any pretense that people are fighting for certain individuals, myself included. We do not believe in politics of coercion, politics of intimidation, or politics of violence. That is MDC, it's anti-MDC. It has not been the character of Dr. Richard Morgan Tsvangirai and what he taught us. So part of the MDC culture, it is not part of the MDC structure politics, it is not part of the MDC ideological and strategic orientation, and for that reason, we are going to leave no stone unturned in dealing with any culprit who is going to be identified or observed to have been involved in this phenomenon. Our take when we got to hear about it was that perhaps these are agent provocateurs who are deployed to try and embarrass the organization. We have had almost 3 days of mourning our president. There was not a single incident. But of course, we knew that it would not end without this kind of blood on otherwise an unblemished record of the movement in terms of the way we interact among ourselves, but even the way we treat visitors.
As I said, Dr. Akupe is on the, on another line. Would you want to address her directly about what happened today?
Well, of course, I try to apologize when I heard about it, but I apologize without the full fact. I still apologize because it's not our character. It's not the MDC. Whoever did it is trying to achieve and advance an agenda which is foreign to the MDC. We want to make sure that we are working together. Dr. Kupe is aware that I actually requested a couple of meetings. Why? Because I believe that she's one of the longest-serving members of the party. But not only that, she has been the longest vice president of the movement. Not only that, she has been one of the few veteran trade unionists who are still with us. We have been loyal to President Tsvangirai through and through. For that reason, I owe it to yourself. I owe it to the party. And we owe it to each other as comrades to make sure that we are united as we go forward, because we are only but almost there in terms of achieving victory. It's a pity that President Tsvangirai has departed us at this last minute, but we know that the last minute is always dangerous. Dangerous to ourselves, dangerous even to those who support us. So we need to be vigilant. We need to be very careful. And I must say, this apology has to go to not just Vice President Kupe, Dr. Kupe, but he must also go to Secretary General Monzora. Even if I have not received the full report of what transpired, I owe it to them that I apologize.
Nelson Chamisa is acting president of the Movement for Democratic Change in Zimbabwe. He spoke with reporter Untunga Mile Nkomo of VOA Zimbabwe Service. Today is the 94th birthday of former Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe, who ruled the country for 37 years before being forced to resign last year by the military. Yesterday, new President Emmerson Mnangagwa declared today Wednesday Robert Mugabe Youth Day and a public holiday. Taban Nare, a Zimbabwean who works with civil society groups inside Zimbabwe, said there are other Zimbabweans who played key roles in the founding of the nation whose birthdays could have also been celebrated as a national holiday.
It looks like this is going to be a low-key event. This is going to be a low-key event where really the celebrations is not clear how it's going to be celebrated.
But, Tabang, we can say that although President Mugabe served the country for 37 years and there was some, criticism about the way he led the country, you can argue that he is the founding father of the modern Zimbabwe. So don't you think he deserves his holiday being celebrated as a public holiday?
Some people don't feel at ease. Robert Mugabe is not the only founding father in Zimbabwe. I'm sure there are people like Joshua Nkomo who played a role. There are people like Josiah Tongogara, Lookout Masuku, Sidney Malunga. There are so many Zimbabweans. And there's a contestation really about, you know, the good that Robert Mugabe did and the bad that he did. You know, so we, as a country, we are still trying to resolve and understand where exactly we place Robert Mugabe. Because as it is, it would seem he still is in some form of house arrest. You know, his movement is sort of managed. You know, we didn't even see him make a speech about the passing on of Mr. Tsvangirai. And we know that Joyce Mujuru, who went out to visit him, appears to have been censured for that visit. You know, so Robert Mugabe's legacy is one that needs to be cleansed and that is currently contested.
I was reading an article by this activist, Pastor Evan Mawere, making a comment in Geneva that on Tuesday that he thinks that the upcoming elections will not be free and fair. I wonder, is too early to say that, or do you think he has a point?
I think clearly there are issues around the capacity of the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission. We know in terms of the commissioners themselves, you know, the deputy commissioner and other commissioners served in the previous commission that supervised the 2013 elections, or some of them were appointed thereafter. And we know in terms of independence that they are not really independent. So while we have a new judge, Chikumba, who is the chair of the Electoral Commission, in terms of capacity, Zimbabwe Electoral Commission does not have the capacity to carry out a free and fair election. I think we also need to see the voters' role. We need to see the state broadcaster ZBC affording all political parties access to, you know, media, you know, access to airtime on radio and TV. So the playing field is still not level as we speak in Zimbabwe.
Taban, thank you very much again. So nice to talk with you always.
Pleasure, James. Thank you.
Taban Nare is a Zimbabwean who works with civil society groups inside Zimbabwe. He was speaking with me from the U.S. city of Dallas in Texas. Today is Wednesday, February 21st, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Daybreak Africa time is 17 minutes past the hour. Africa is losing tens of billions of dollars a year in illegal financial flows. More money, in fact, than it receives in official development assistance. That assessment is staggering. Now, a new report by the Paris-based Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development offers a bigger look at the illegal economy behind it and how African and richer nations can fight it. Lisa Bryan has more for VOA from the French capital.
Medications and narcotic smuggling, ivory and people trafficking, oil theft and piracy. Africa is conservatively losing about $50 billion a year in illicit financial flows. If that estimate is not new, the OECD's latest report tries to tie the strings together, zooming in on West Africa. One sector in particular stands out.
What we found is that, in fact, 80% of illicit financial flows from West Africa are generated from the illegal theft of oil.
Catherine Anderson heads governance issues at the OECD. She says West African countries aren't the only ones losing out from illicit flows. So are developed nations. Migrant trafficking, a huge hot-button issue in Europe, is a case in point.
One of our case studies is on Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb, who are benefiting from kidnap-for-ransom activities. They are interdicting the trade and passage of goods across the Sahel, levying protection fees and revenues from the population. So these have significant implications not just for West African populations, but for Europe in terms of insecurity and instability.
She says that means illegal resource flows need to be tackled holistically, not only by the countries of origin, but those where the finances are transiting and those where they finally end up, including developed countries. Doing so can be particularly tricky in West Africa, where a huge informal economy blurs the boundary of what is legal and what is not. Ambassador Segun Apata of Nigeria is a member of a United Nations high-level panel looking into illicit financial flows from Africa. He says some African governments are beginning to tackle the problem, but they don't always have the capacity to do so.
We have not made giant strides yet. We are still at the elementary, at the mundane level of implementation.
Ambassador Apata says if the $50 billion in losses from illegal activities were actually channeled into development in West Africa, it could help to check the illegal migration that European countries worry about. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
Officials from Rwanda are visiting Burundi for the first time since 2015, when the current political crisis in Burundi erupted. As Moses Havyarimana reports from Bujumbura, the visit is seen as a major step towards mending the sour relations between the two countries for the last 3 years.
Since 2015, when protests against the incumbent President Pierre Nkurunziza erupted, Burundi and Rwanda relations deteriorated significantly, with Burundi accusing Rwanda of militarily training Burundian refugees to oust Nkurunziza's government. In return, Rwanda had accused Burundi of sheltering the FDLR rebels, who were accused of committing the 1994 genocide against the Tutsi. Fatuma Ndangiza is a Rwandan representative in the East African Legislative Assembly.
Rwandan delegation, Rwandan chapter is part of the YALA team. So we are here as regional representatives, and Burundi is part of the Central Corridor. So when we are here, we are in one of our constituencies. We want to know how Burundians are doing. But I also emphasize that we are brothers and sisters. This is how Rwanda see Burundi. We have a lot in common. It's unity and diversity.
Rwanda lawmakers are among the East African Legislative Assembly team that are currently in Burundi as part of the mission to assess the community institutions. For the past 3 years, officials from Rwanda or Burundi boycotted any activity that is conducted in either country. Aden Omar Abdikadir is a member of the East African Legislative Assembly from Kenya.
Our colleagues of Rwanda are here. In fact, many of them are some of the reasons why we came here. They wanted us to be here. This is the beginning of a new chapter. You know, as East Africans, we must see each other as brothers.
Regardless being a member state in the East African community, trade between the two countries deteriorated significantly. Burundi banned exportations of fruits and vegetables to Rwanda since 2016, the move that undermines the East African Community Common Market Protocol on the free movement of goods and services in the region. Buriku Kie Victor is a Burundian lawmaker.
Because I will still believe that MPs, as a representative of people, can help to sort out problems between countries. Representative of people may help to suggest what can be done to solve that problem.
Trade between Burundi and Rwanda deteriorated, as in 2016, when Burundi banned exportations of food to Rwanda. But the current visit of Rwanda officials gives hope for the two countries to amend their relations. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
When Liberia's healthcare system buckled under the Ebola outbreak a few years ago, more than 100,000 malaria cases went untreated, according to a new study. It's one way the researchers show that the toll of the outbreak goes beyond the 11,000 killed in West Africa by the disease itself. Basic healthcare took a major hit also. Viewer Steve Baragona has more.
The countries of West Africa were ill-equipped to deal with the Ebola outbreak that started in 2014. Many clinics lacked the most basic tools to contain the spread of the disease, such as latex gloves and face masks, says lead author Brad Wagenaar at the University of Washington.
Rightfully so, people were afraid to go to the clinic because they might get Ebola when they're at the clinic.
Wagenaar and colleagues looked at monthly data on health visits from 379 Liberian clinics outside the capital, Monrovia, from 2010 to 2016. They found that within 4 months of the start of the outbreak, people were visiting these facilities much less often.
They're receiving 40 to 60% less essential outpatient health care, attended births, childhood vaccinations, malaria treatments. So that was a huge, dramatic decrease.
The study was published in the journal PLOS Medicine. It took more than a year and a half for all services to return to pre-outbreak levels. In the meantime, however, the researchers estimated that more than 750,000 clinic visits were lost. That includes the loss of more than 5,000 births at healthcare facilities, in a country with one of the world's highest rates of maternal death, and 100,000 lost malaria treatments. And Wagenaar says the numbers suggest other malaria prevention activities declined too, such as distributing bed nets and spraying insecticides.
Some of these other things didn't happen during the Ebola outbreak because the health system and other partners were busy with other issues. And now the cases have been increasing.
Malaria cases were 50% higher at the end of 2017 than before the epidemic, Wagenaar says. The research highlights how more attention must be devoted to maintaining basic services during a health emergency, he adds, and to strengthening them in the aftermath. Steve Barragona, VOA News.
Black Panther is a certified Hollywood blockbuster, raking in more than $200 million in North America during its opening weekend, setting several records. As viewers Ken Fairbaugh reports, the film's success comes as no surprise to the fans that packed theaters in the south side of Chicago to celebrate a film that marks a welcome departure from the Hollywood norm.
Nine-year-old Akilah Jaco has not yet watched Black Panther, but she already knows something about the movie.
It's a black superhero. There's a lot of people like us, and there's a lot of black children in the movie.
Jaco was among hundreds of students from the Betty Shabazz International Charter School that turned a showing of Black Panther at the Studio Movie Grill Theater on Chicago's South Side into a celebration of African culture and heritage.
We support this. We encourage that more of this is accepted.
Tahira Cartman says it's long past due for such a film.
It's 2018. We've had a black president. We shouldn't be just still having slavery movies. You know, we've seen those stories. We need to see more positive stories.
This film is a major departure as far as the types of roles that black actors are given and the types of storylines that we see black characters in the midst of.
Professor Blair Davis focuses some of his classes at DePaul University and his own study on the impact of comic book characters on pop culture. He believes Black Panther will be remembered as more than just a superhero film.
The best films, I think, we remember because they say something bigger. They say something about who we are as people, and I think the cultural aspects of Black Panther are what are going to allow us to remember it in years to come. So I think that it will succeed on its own merits as an action film, but I think that thanks to the talent of Ryan Coogler, that this will have a lasting value as this sort of perhaps sea change in Hollywood.
And it's a vision of black people in power and of black people having control over their own destiny.
Carol Lee is one of the founders of the Betty Shabazz International Charter School.
We're an African-centric school.
She says while Black Panther is a fictional film, it reinforces what they teach.
It's tapped a spirit, and that's why people are coming out in such numbers, bringing their children, dressing in ways, cultural ways of affirming. Yes, we are very clear about who we are.
It's definitely affecting the way our children, you know, see themselves and affect who they want to be and who they look up to, who they aspire to be. All of that definitely matters.
For Akilah Jaco, even before she took her seat to see the film for the first time, Black Panther was already teaching her an important lesson.
You know, it says, like I said, like anything's possible.
It is also possible Black Panther could become one of the highest grossing films of all time. Kane Fairbaugh, VOA News, Chicago.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Ethiopia's foreign minister has said there are no security concerns in the country, despite a state of emergency imposed by the government last week. Briefing ambassadors in Addis Ababa on Tuesday, Foreign Minister Wakne Gebreyehu said the government declared the state of emergency because it could not control the unrest through the regular law enforcement mechanism. And the Rwandan army used live ammunition on Tuesday to disperse Congolese refugees who walked out of their camp to protest poor living conditions. And that's it for this Wednesday, February 21st edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good Wednesday.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, South Africa has a new president, Cyril Ramaphosa. He ascended to the top position after the ruling African National Congress ordered the embattled, scandal-plagued Jacob Zuma to step down as president. We will discuss the implications of the ANC's power shift on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. This is Peter Clotty, host of VOA's Africa Weekend show, Nightline Africa. Tune in. You will be glad you did.
Nightline Africa is a fast-paced, tightly edited news show designed to keep our listeners engaged from beginning to end. Nightline comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz. 19.2 meter band.